seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus gomina fanacht gáir a chloig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'áireachta sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Anne-Marie O'Dwyer, chatting all things the psychiatry of cancer.
I want to say that it's very common to be very distressed, to have a very prominent psychological response to cancer, that they are not alone, that lots of other people feel in that way, and that it's important for them to have information. Information is power, but it has to be the right information.
As ever, we're available on all podcast platforms.
Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the GAA All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship and GAA Legends Tour Series of Croke Park. Hashtag hurling to the core.
Hello and welcome to the Throw-In Independent.ie's GA podcast in association with Bord Gáis Energy. I'm Will Slattery, delighted to be joined as always by Michael Verini. Michael, good morning.
Great morning. A great morning. This has been 2021 has been like every introduction nearly to the Throw-In has nearly been a positive Offaly news bulletin, and they don't get any more positive than yesterday. My voice is a bit croaky. The thirst and want and hunger for success in Offaly yesterday just led to great celebrations and just euphoria all around the county and all around Dublin yesterday. Just brilliant. No one could have envisaged. We had Michael Dignan on a couple of months back, but no one could have envisaged, you know, that we'd get an All-Ireland at any grade this quickly. And it was just greeted with absolute jubilation everywhere.
Yeah, a memorable Ireland under 20 final victory over Roscommon, you know, Shane Lowry in the stands, you know, obviously.
Unbelievable scenes, like, just to see the passion. Like, here's a guy who's won an Open Championship and an Irish Open, and, like, did he celebrate yesterday more than he celebrated those two, possibly?
Yeah, no, it was brilliant to see, and I know you were talking to him over the weekend as well, you know, to get more of an insight into his kind of contributions to Offaly GAA, and obviously everyone knows he's steeped in history, you know, his father obviously and uncle having played on that five in a row denying team in 1982, but, you know, that boost that we talked about a few weeks ago, now you're seeing tangible benefits, it must be such a lift for the county.
Oh, unbelievable, yeah. Like, Declan Kelly, the manager, talked about yesterday, when they beat Dublin, it was almost like, you know, the dam started bursting almost. They just believed they just needed to get a title under their belt. All of a sudden, they go and play champagne football to beat Cork. And then an absolute thrilling final yesterday. And kind of in typical Offaly fashion, like, the Jack Bryan's goal had them up by 7 on the 50th minute. And Roscommon had it back to a goal and had a goal chance in injury time. We don't usually do things too easily. So probably the drama only added to it. But, like, if you go down to that team, like, Cottle Donoghue wing forward, like a couple of Brian Howard-esque catches there underneath the Hogan stand when they really needed somebody to stand up. Jack Bryant, obviously a real talented forward. Cormac Egan, who was only minor last year, another brilliant forward. Aaron Callaghan, son of Pascal, that used to play with Offaly as well, kicked 4 from play yesterday. Morgan Tynan midfield. Like, there's a lot of talent that we could potentially mine over the next couple of years. But Declan Kelly did say as well, in fairness, and he's right, like, just the call for patience, like, that will be probably 3 or 4 years before these guys can really make a mark, or would hope to make a mark at senior level. But it's different with, like, a Dublin or a Cork winning an underage title. Like, this could well set us up for the next decade. We'll, you know, really look after these lads and keep them developing through and try and get as many through to the senior ranks as possible. It was just brilliant. The scenes at the final whistle. I was in the dressing room after yesterday, actually. It was Declan Kelly, the manager, invited myself and another journalist in, and it's actually mad to see how calm they were. No, it was probably an hour after, but just almost that they expected it, and that chatting to a couple of the players, and that this is only like part of what they want to achieve, that they want to achieve a lot more. And that's just great to hear, because maybe times in the past we would have just settled for something and that was it. But looks like we have a lot of ambition now, and yeah, it's exciting times.
Yeah, and it was one of the kind of many dramatic moments across a very exciting weekend. We're going to be joined by Breed Stack a little later on to discuss the ladies' football semi-finals, Dublin and Meath qualifying for the decider there. But first, we're going to look back on that epic Dublin Mayo game, another chapter to one of the most thrilling kind of rivalries over the last 10 years. We're delighted to have David Brady and Kieran Whelan on the line with us. Good morning, guys.
Good, well, not about it.
All's good. All's good.
I'm sure it is, David. We might come to you first. I know you've been coming on our show for a number of years now, and usually after Dublin Mayo games, you were probably a little deflated and disappointed. But in terms of the journey this team has been on, where does Saturday night rank in terms of, you know, the comeback to finally beat this Dublin team after their long period of dominance? You know, where does this rank?
I think, well, a little deflated would be an understatement for the last 10 years, I suppose. And look, it is. A monumental moment again for Mayo, because it has been a decade or more. 2012, I think, losses. 2012 is the last time we won, but it really is a milestone. And I think, look at, you have to, and not that the talk is all Mayo the last few days, 2 days. Look at, they deserve that credit, but I think it's the class and the caliber of a team that bet. A team that have went, gone through the last 10 years nearly dominating GAA in every way, shape or form in Ireland. And I think that was a big achievement for Mayo to beat the team that have dominated GAA football in every way, shape or form. And I think that was a big thing. And I think both personally as a Mayo man, as a Mayo person, as a Mayo supporter, we have always said it, we're on this journey with the team, and the team represents the people. And I think people have been, time and time again, we have come up short and we have failed, and it's been very disappointing against Dublin, because their class just eluded us by the smallest of margin in games. And it was great to get that one victory, and I suppose it was to beat Dublin, such a dominant Dublin team, one of the greatest we'll ever see in GAA.
Yeah, we'll get into maybe what Mayo did in a little more detail in a minute. But Kieran, just first from a Dublin perspective, you know, as David mentioned there, how dominant they've been. I think it's over 2,500 days since their last championship defeat 7 years ago against Donegal at this stage. Like, how do you reflect on it with, you know, two days later now, just having let the game maybe settle for a few days? What are your ultimate thoughts now?
Yeah, well, firstly, Will, I'm a bit worried about Dave. He doesn't sound too great there. He's either recovering from a couple of days on the beer, or he has cold.
if you only knew, but you're looking.
But yeah, listen, I suppose, Will, to answer the question, you know, I think in the balance of the game on Saturday night, you couldn't take anything away from Mayo. Mayo deserved it. And in some ways, it was nearly a role reversal of games in the past where, you know, Mayo had been quite dominant in the first half and Dublin had come out and had the legs on them and had the bench and had that extra power, physicality, and were able to overrun Mayo in the closing either third or fourth quarters. That's exactly kind of what happened the other night. And I think it's probably a huge credit to James Horn in that he has transitioned this team so quickly. The amount of players that Mayo did also lose in the last couple of years, and the young guys he's brought in combined with, you know, even more experienced guys. Padraig O'Hara is a bit older and stuff like that. And you know, you got a sense from Dublin in that particularly, you know, they were still 12 points to 7 up, you know, with 10 minutes to go in normal time. And you would expect that Dublin would close that out and control the game. And that's been their key strength for many a year. But they're outscored 6-1 in the closing 15 minutes. And it looked like they just didn't have the legs. They couldn't get the ball into the forward unit. They were making basic mistakes and being turned over by the sheer pressure of Mayo, because they had really pushed up man on man. And maybe, I don't know, maybe they had saved a bit in the tank. I'm sure James Horan wasn't too happy at halftime, but because they did play a kind of a game of containment. But they didn't want to concede a goal. in the first half. There was no doubt about that. And they were getting bodies back in front of the square and they kind of stepped off Dublin. But maybe they kept a bit in the tank knowing that when they went after Dublin man to man and really went up the pitch, which they did, particularly in that last quarter, they showed that they were just a team on the way up and Dublin's legs were really gone and they fully deserved it.
Yeah, Michael, from your perspective, you know, the way the game played out, as Kieran referred to there, you know, at halftime, Dublin with a 10-4 lead, 62 minutes on the clock, they're 12-7 up. Then you have Tiernan O'Connor's miracle play to keep the ball in, and that seemed to be like a momentum switch. And from there on, Mayo really did dominate. Like, what changed for you in the closing stages? Because while Mayo probably did the better the second half, I think it was only 3-2 maybe, you know, up to the 62nd minute in that second half. So for you, what changed?
Yeah, we were actually hurling ourselves Sunday or Saturday evening. So we're kind of, I was on the line, unfortunately, carrying a knock, and we were kind of looking at bits and pieces of it. And you're just thinking at half time, you're thinking, okay, Dublin are in complete control here. Even 10 minutes into the second half, they're in complete control. And then there was a mixture, as Kieran says, there was a mixture of, I suppose, the pace and energy and exuberance that Mayo brought to the table, probably typified with that Dermot O'Connor incident where, like, it's just, it's a superhuman kind of a thing. I'm surprised there's not a meme flying around of, you know, him diving to, like, and just the ball is recycled then and Kevin McLaughlin puts it over. But there was so many uncharacteristic mistakes made by the Dubs as well. I couldn't believe that James McCarthy was turned over at that stage when he was. Or I don't even know if he was turned over. I think he nearly turned over himself. Aaron Byrne came on at one stage. He was only on the field about 30 seconds. He kicked away a ball straight away. Just really, really on Dublin, like, things were happening. Part of that was self-inflicted, and another big part of it was just what Mayo were bringing to the table. Like, that high press at the end of normal time was just, you were looking at it, and the ball was back with Evan Comerford, and he never looked comfortable. Davy Byrne never looked comfortable. They were just right up on top of them, and they forced some really, really uncharacteristic mistakes from Dublin. They nearly had Dublin spooked, I would say, in normal time, and again at the end of extra time as well. And just an unbelievable effort from a group of guys that just didn't want to take no for an answer the other night. So it's probably, you know, some of it was self-inflicted from Dublin, but a lot of it was the pressure that Mayo were putting on them. It was just phenomenal to watch. I haven't seen a spectacle like that in a long, long time. From a game, you know, a lot of people were looking at it or barely looking at it up until half time and maybe glancing at other things. And then all of a sudden, as Mayo and Dublin always do, they just draw you in. And it was just a remarkable finale. It was just unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, David, like, what did that moment from Dermot O'Connor, you know, mean for that Mayo team and the Mayo support? Like, that kind of typifies the journey they've been on, that kind of never say die, never give in attitude.
Yeah, look, and the boys have mentioned it there, that incident where he just, you know, it is the old cliche, a game of inches, but him getting his foot to that ball and preventing it from going out. And I think it was the spark that, like, the point that Kevin McLaughlin scored from it, you know, took nearly 40 yards out, left foot over, and that just kind of went right. That, I think, it just created a whole momentum shift to say, we're in this. And that's where that momentum came from. And look, we don't know what would happen if that ball did go over the line and out. And I do think Dublin, probably when we look back at it again, when you see over the last decades of success for Dublin, I think Stephen Cluxton controls a lot of the game. And him not being there, we'll never know what would have happened if he was. But I think Dublin failed to control, and they've controlled a lot of their football. And they've been allowed to do that. Mayo allowed it in the first half. But I think that whole kind of enthusiasm and sheer resilience and pressure that Mayo put on, it just started creating kinks. And I think Dublin then, it was very uncharacteristic of them. You know, there was numerous times you're going, why are they kicking a long ball in? Why did they just, you know, punt that ball 30 yards in the air when they just should have kept possession? And it allowed easy turnovers from Mayo perspective, because Mayo gathered the ball and they're on the counter-attack as well. But I do think the impetus of their substitutes, fresh men, fresh legs, regardless of their name, their caliber, their experience, like the likes of Enda Hesham, but massive, I suppose, kind of sparked and just his freshness, fresh in Mayo. I think probably the time and when Aidan O'Shea was taken off, like Aidan is the captain. He's the fulcrum of that team over the last decade as well. That kind of goes, well, Jesus, it's up to me now, because I have to lead. And I think not alone did a whole, you know, a whole new breed of leaders step up, the likes of Jordan Flynn and the Hessian. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. But the old brigade came back to life. The likes of Lee Keegan, I thought he was absolutely phenomenal. We tend to write players off once you come next. Now you're near 30 years of age in this world now, but he was like a new man, and he was fantastic. And the likes of Matty Roan continue to put in a monumental amount of work, and it's from that basis and from that, you know, ball going over the line by Jim O'Connor, that it created a tidal wave of momentum. And I think just that positivity from that point going 12-7, like Dublin would have been in a position to close the game out at that stage. But it turned the game on its head.
Yeah, Kieran, like the lack of composure by Dublin at the end, as David mentioned, so uncharacteristic. You know, was that down to Mayo's pressure? Was that just down to, I suppose there has been a bit of a malaise in the team throughout the championship campaign. You know, what do you put your finger on for that one?
I think if to look at it closely, possibly maybe the impact of the bench and the lack of experience coming off the bench. And, you know, if you go back, you know, okay, maybe over the last 2 years, Dublin really haven't regenerated anyone and found two or three players. And you look at the strength that they used to have coming off the bench, and particularly in that last 15 minutes, you know, you had Evan in goal and you had Davy Byrne, who was out on his feet, who had done a lot of good work throughout the day. And there was just wasn't options there. There wasn't guys willing to take the ball, and there was a bit of lack of experience. And, you know, Dublin probably played panic football, particularly in extra time. When, you know, when they went the three down, you're thinking, yeah, it's always difficult to close, pull back 3 points in extra time, just the nature of the way the game kind of unfolds. But they kind of panicked very early and start hitting silly balls into forward line. Mayo had bodies back. Mayo just swept up and control the tempo of the game. So, like, for me, that, like if you go back to the first half, Dublin looked like the old Dublin. Very solid defensively. We're doing well in midfield. Their interchange playing forward line was a little bit better than it had been in recent weeks. But in the second half, when Mayo got on top of some of Dublin's key players, Dublin got very little off their bench, where Mayo really got a lot off their bench. You know, I think Mayo were nearly forced into playing to their strengths to a certain degree, coming in 6 points down, and the Hessian comes on, and it was kind of saying, right, let's ask questions to these guys, let's run at them. And the pace that Mayo had across that middle third, even with Conor Loftus, Matthew Ruan, Dermot O'Connor, the guys working their socks off, and Dublin just couldn't match that and struggled when they came in. And all year, you know, you know the forward line hadn't been really ticking, and to a certain degree, maybe some Dublin's forward play has become predictable, that if the first ball's not on, they recycle and their forwards aren't really taking defenders on or really running at defenders and getting guys on the shoulders and breaking game lines. There's been very, very little of that from Dublin. They've missed that with Jack McCaffrey gone. You know, James McCarthy used to come with these angled runs. They used to have set plays coming from deep where they used to carve open defences. We haven't seen that. And Dublin didn't have those go-to plays to go to in that second half, and just lacked that punch up front when Conor Callan and Kilkenny were relatively tied up man-to-man.
And Michael, one of the big talking points across the day was the performance of referee Conor Lane. Obviously, the John Small tackle on McLaughlin having surgery on a broken jaw was one of the big ones. There was a few other contentious decisions across the afternoon. You know, what did you make of his performance?
Yeah, patchy, I'd say, to say the least. I don't know if we've got a definitive answer as to why the 45 was retaken. Some are saying that Philly McMahon walked in front of him. I didn't see that by the time. He don't think he had the ball placed when he did that. Maybe it was to do with Kieran Kilkenny and Páirc Ó'Hara kind of pulling at each other just behind the play, but very, very hard to it's very, very hard to decipher actually what exactly the reason was. Others are saying Mayo had a 16th man on the pitch. If Mayo had a 16th man on the pitch, you'd find it hard or creditable that they would be rewarded for having a 16 man on the pitch by getting another shot at the 45. But just a word on Rob Henley, who has taken a fair degree of flack in recent years, to have the cojones to, you know, put that ball back down the second time and rifle it over the bar, and just to see even him embracing with his parents and girlfriend and family after the match, is just like that's kind of what it's all about. Back to your question on the referee, the John Small incident has definitely been highlighted a lot, and Owen McLaughlin's going to be out for the foreseeable future. Over that incident, I will say this: in normal time, it was very, very hard to see what people are putting up in still photos. Now, when you look back at it a couple of times, it's a lot easier to see it. So I do have some sympathy with Conor Lane on that one, but there were a couple of bizarre decisions throughout the game, and maybe to some extent at the end of normal time, he was almost leveling things back up in Mayo's favour for a couple of bogeys that he'd made kind of throughout the game. But at least it didn't have an effect really on the result at the end of the day. The best team won. Mayo were the best team from, you know, 45, 50 minutes onwards. And like, it's scarcely believable to say that, you know, Dublin would score 4 points in what, 55 minutes of football. They would score their only point of extra time in the opening 30 seconds, and then they wouldn't score thereafter. And like, I don't think any of us will ever see a more gripping period of extra time with no scores. Like that second period of extra time without a score was just, it was Hollywood stuff, like real blockbuster kind of an ending without a score. But just an amazing game that had absolutely everything, really.
Yeah, David, I'll just bring you in on that John Small incident. It is getting so much, you know, coverage today. And as Michael mentioned, a lot of social media comments and still photos being circulated. And I know they had a big debate about it on the Sunday game as well last night. Like, what's your view on it?
My view is, well, one, that, you know, to wish Owen McLaughlin a speedy recovery from an absolutely horrific injury, like a double jaw, breaking your jaw in two places, is a serious injury to carry. Not just, I know myself from doing it in my time, you carry that for the rest of your life. let's be straight. No matter if you're looking at it on Twitter or replaying it or pausing it or stopping it, I would like to say, and I feel as a player, Kieran, you know this, there's times you just line up someone. John Small had no real malice in what he was doing. Like, he didn't intend to break his jaw, but you line up a player and he got it wrong. But more importantly, the referee got it wrong. No matter what way you look at it, even in the way that you knew that Owen McLaughlin was gone. He was gone. He was knocked out hitting the ground. That's the time you go. If the referee didn't see a free, so be it, but he stops the play. And you say to yourself, somebody needs attention here or help. And I do think that incident affected the game. And it affected in a positive way for Mayo. Because I do think that Conor Lane knew he made a mistake, and then he refereed it that way. I don't know. As we said, I don't know on the incident with Rob retaking the 45. I don't know where that came out of myself. I can't see it, and I look back, and you're going, Philly was 30 yards away when Rob struck the first ball, but Conor Lane got it wrong. And it's not the first time he's got it wrong. And the big, massive calls he's got wrong in the past. And he got it wrong on Saturday as well. And it's unfortunate. A referee goes out to do his best. But from my perspective, that's not good enough. So it's not. And it's not about just the horrific injury to Owen. It's about a number of things. And I do think that there was some calls after that, even as a Mayo person, I'm going, that was soft enough for us, but we'll take it. But yeah, it shouldn't, unfortunately, it shouldn't be part of a review or an analysis, but that is the role the referee plays, and they can have some very big calls to make, and he didn't make them. And there was, you know, from, you know, he was afraid to show a number. I don't know. Basquel's black card for me was in between. There was probably two, if not three others, black cards that you would, yes, say, definitely, without a doubt. That's what the rules say, and they weren't given. But again, I do think that probably lifted Mayo for her perspective to say, well, here, we're definitely in this on our own now. James Horn, I have never seen him as animated. I've never seen the team doctor, Sean Moffat, as mad. Like, we're up in the stands, we're watching on the screen, but these are the people on the pitch. And when I say a referee is a team of officials, linesmen, and they need to make the big calls as well. Because if you have a guy that's 15 yards away officiating and you have a guy that's 10 yards and they can't see it, well, then there's something wrong.
Well, we might give Ciarán the last word, so we'll talk about Mayo, I'm sure, in our All-Ireland preview in a few weeks' time. But for Dublin, Ciarán, and I suppose reflecting the season going forward, what does Desi Farrell do now? Like, do they, you know, recalibrate their style of play, as you mentioned, in attack? Does he get on the phone to Jack McCaffrey and Paul Mania and kind of plead with them to make themselves available? There's a Stephen Crooks an issue as well. There's a lot of question marks from probably the first time in a long time.
Yeah, there is. I suppose, you know, over the next few weeks, it will become clear what route Dublin have to follow. You know, it's disappointing that Jack and Paul weren't available, because I think that it would make a huge difference. And maybe that question is asked, got to be asked, can they get them back in the scene and why they're not there presently? But for me, I think Dublin have to go through a kind of a transition. And I think Desi's going to have to commit to trying to find four or five players, because I suppose, let's be very honest about this, there's probably four or five in the current team that are north of 30 and may not have much petrol left in the tank. They've been played in massive games the last 10 years. They have a lot of miles on the clock. And, you know, maybe, you know, Desi is kind of kept with the same group of players that Jim Gavin had 2 years ago. And I really think the challenge over the next 12 to 18 months is really to try and transition new players in, commit to them, give them time in the jersey. You know, let's try and find two or three players, similar to the approach probably that James Horan took 2 years ago, where you just have to commit to it. And I think Dublin fans are going to have to be patient during that period. I think this could be the start of maybe a bleak couple of years while Dublin are still up there. You can't just write them off after Saturday's performance. They're still one of the top teams, but maybe we have to take two steps back to take a few steps forward. And that's going to be Desi's key challenge over the next 12 to 18 months, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch. But for the meantime, Ciarán, David, thanks so much for joining us.
No worries.
Pleasure, guys.
Well, it's now time to turn our attention to ladies' football on the Throne podcast in association with Bord Gáis Energy. And we're delighted to be joined by Cork legend Breed Stack. Breed, how are you?
Good. How are you keeping, lads? Good to be on with you. Good.
No, thanks for joining us. Commiserations, I suppose. Your former team suffering a heartbreaking defeat and a dramatic defeat. But as a lot of story it is for the sport, though, for me to qualify for that All-Ireland final coming from the intermediate grade. You know, how big a shock is that for a team to kind of go from where they were to being in the All-Ireland final?
Yeah, I think the weekend in general was a real, like, never say die attitude for, you know, across the men's and the women's. But yeah, I suppose the Meath comeback was something very, very special for Meath. I suppose as Cork person, I definitely was disappointed that the girls didn't see out the game in real time, you know, and I felt that they could have drawn on a lot of experience, which they would have had in those kind of tight-knit games down through the years. So I suppose disappointing from that point of view, but you can't take away from Meath. They still had to finish a goal. They still had to go on and kick on an extra time, and they did that in great fashion. So the Meath story is like a fairy tale stuff, to be honest, you know. I suppose into the end of 2016, they asked to regrade from senior. You know, it was fairly obvious that they were on a real downward spiral. And, you know, I remember playing them in 2015 in a qualifier game, and I think we beat them by 40 points. So, you know, it wasn't good for anyone. Like, it wasn't good for us. It wasn't good for them. And I can imagine morale was fairly low in Meath at that time. So a massive decision had to be made to regrade. And I know that came up against a lot of opposition of some of the older girls from Meath who I would have played against for years. It's very, very hard when you are senior status to give that, I suppose, back and take that step back. And it's a bit of a blow to the ego, maybe a small bit, but it was very necessary. And like, you have to give massive plaudits to Meath County Board for what they did to regrade the girls and start the rebuilding that they did. And Meath went on in 2017, I think it was, they contested an intermediate semi-final. In 2018 and 19, they contested the intermediate finals, didn't get over the line. But like that hardness, and I suppose that grit was there, and they got over the line in 2020 and are now up senior, and in their first year now up senior to be contesting an All-Ireland senior final is the stuff of dreams, you know. And not just like even in championship, even in league format, like they've gone from Division 3 to Division 1. So, you know, it really is fairy tale stuff, and massive plaudits must be given to both county board and to the players. You know, for sticking with a system and I suppose seeing it through to fruition now this year.
Yeah, Michael, because it's a great advertisement for, I suppose, that tiered system where you can build and grow across, you know, years and work your way up. I know going to the men's game, you know, they're maybe bringing in that divisional structure to allow teams grow year on year and compete with your level and hopefully then reach the next level.
Yeah, I do. I think it was really, really, I suppose, great foresight by ladies football in what they do. Now, I do think the junior, intermediate and senior is probably too much of a step for the men's, you know. I probably do think that a two-tier system would be better. But like, even when you look at the system that the girls played this year in championship, I suppose they played a group system. There was three teams per group in senior level. There was four in one group, I think. And it just meant, you know, that there were girls playing games week on week. And then it just meant that there was great competition. And we saw some super games down through the championship in the ladies football. So like, imagine if you put that into the men's structure and like, you know, you have maybe two groups of 16 or whatever it is. And like, oh, like the games, and just that's what players want. Players want to be playing games. They don't want to be training. And I suppose the days of the provincial championship really are behind us now. Like, you know, and I suppose for the ladies structure, they do have the possibility of playing a provincial title after the All-Ireland, but I don't know whether teams would be still up for that, but I definitely think this structure is definitely suiting teams very well. And yeah, it's great to see, and thankfully we've had a great ladies championship.
You still don't expect a team coming up from intermediate to have that sort of an impact, though. It's phenomenal. And I suppose as Breed said there, the hardness and toughness that they've kind of developed, been beaten in finals, they were, you know, they've been knocking on the door for a while. But even like, you know, Tipperary came up senior a couple of years ago and made an impact, but I think they were actually relegated over the weekend as well. To actually get all the way through to a final, and for me to be playing Dublin in a ladies final and two Leinster teams to be playing the final, I think the intermediate final is all Leinster as well. Probably not something that will make you particularly happy, Breed, but it's amazing. It really, really is. I'm living in Dunboyne and Meath here, and the want and thirst for the women to do really well, even after last year and even forward into this year, it's unbelievable. From a Cork point of view, as something you briefly mentioned, I'd imagine if you were on the pitch and a couple of your maybe your more experienced colleagues back in the day, you'd be fairly disappointed to be letting a lead like that slip in the manner that you did. Although it was brilliant for Meath, for Cork to let that slip in the way that they did must have been very disappointing to watch on.
Because Cork got that first goal and you felt right, okay, they're getting to grips with this game. And then I suppose when the second goal came, you thought it was kind of job done. And I suppose Cork were very much in control. I think they were up 2-8, 7 points at that stage with 5 minutes to go. So you really couldn't see a way back for Meath. And I suppose Meath, in fairness to them, you know, the likes of Emma Duggan was absolutely outstanding. Like for a girl of 18 years of age, she really took on a massive role yesterday. And she kicked a great point to bring it back to 2-8 to 8 points. And then I suppose, you know, even with, I think it was a minute 30, I think was on the clock when Meath got that penalty. And you still kind of felt, you know, look, Cork will see this out. You know, they have the experience. So the goal was slotted by Stacey Grimes. And then like Cork had to draw on their experience. And it was a cardinal sin to go short at that time. And I suppose that was the biggest thing that looking on at the match, you would have felt that Cork needed to go long. They needed to force maybe a free, or, you know, they just needed to keep possession, but keep it away from danger with a goal in it. And, you know, they didn't. They opted to go short. I think Martina played to Marie Ambrose, who had Vicky Wall and Emma Duggan, probably two most, you know, influential players for Meath yesterday, coming on her and got overturned. Now, in fairness to Meath, they still had a bit of work to do, and like three soft, lovely hand passes and Emma Duggan was at the tail end of it then to slot home. So like massive credit has to go to Meath. But yeah, I suppose from a Cork point of view, given how many All-Ireland finals, how many All-Ireland semi-finals that they've been in, you would have expected a cooler kind of head towards the end.
Yeah, Michael, and as you mentioned, it sets up an All-Ireland final, an All-Leinster clash between Meath and Dublin, who are now into their eighth All-Ireland final in a row. They're going for five in a row themselves. You know, what did you make of their victory over Mayo? They seem to have them at arm's length for most of the game, even though Mayo got two first-half goals to maybe kind of make it a little more of a contest. But Dublin did seem to be reasonably comfortable. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's funny. I was in Croke Park yesterday. I was covering the Offaly game, and a high-profile LGFA person who shall remain nameless came in with 5 minutes to go and said, another Cork Dublin final. And they were left with egg in their face maybe 20 or 25 minutes later. But Dublin definitely kept up their side of the bargain anyway. They kind of always had Mayo at arm's length, and Hannah Terrell, who was, I think she got married on Thursday, you know, and she was brilliant. She was brilliant again on Saturday. And they just, even like to do what they did without Carla Rowe, who's probably the most informed player in the country at the moment, is, you know, it's a fair testament. And like, obviously Noel Healy's gone since last year as well. So it's a fair testament to the squad that they have. Some interesting comments after from Mick Bohan, and I think it was all kind of unprompted, about, you know, people suggesting that they're, you know, a cynical team, or that they, you know, there's elements of cynicism in their play, which I thought was interesting, considering that, to me anyway, I don't watch, you know, maybe ladies football religiously throughout the year, but, you know, the four or five games that I see of them playing throughout the year, they're very, very easy on the eye. They're very easy to watch. All good teams, as Breed will tell you, you can't be like unbelievably nice the whole time. That's just not the way it is. There are times when you just have to toe the line and do whatever you have to do to get over the line. But I think he said they've been averaging something like 314 in games. Like, and if that's what a cynical team is doing, I don't think they're a particularly cynical team. But again, when you're going for a five in a row and there's elements of complacency you could possibly sit in, you probably need anything just to justify your cause even a bit more. And it seems to me that that has definitely sprung them into action a bit more. And they're going to be raging hot favourites going into the final now, you'd have to say.
Yeah, Bree, what did you make of Mick Bohan's comments about that kind of cynical side to their play? Do you think there is, first, do you think there is a cynical side to their play? Do you think that is a fair comment to make about them?
Like Michael said, you know, any team that is going for five in a row like that, you definitely don't want a bit of complacency to come in. So yeah, look, there's always going to be a time where you're going to maybe play on the edge a bit, and you always need a couple of players that do play on the edge in any team, you know. I think it comes back to the semi-final versus Donegal. There was probably a lot of call for the referee to impose cards, which probably weren't imposed in the semi-final. So I know probably Max Bernier, he called it out a lot after the semi-final. And I think Mick Bohan drew on that then, like that, basically that the girls are, I suppose, a different animal now, that they're leaner, stronger, that they're in the gym a lot more, that, you know, the rules need to adapt for that. So in that point of view, I do agree. I do think it's the inconsistency in the refereeing that's more an issue than anything else. You know, like we saw in the Donegal game, that there were things left go that yesterday weren't left go. So I know it's just, and like, I suppose the big thing for Dublin probably, and why people are calling out on a bit of cynicism, is yes, they are mounting up these massive scores, but they're also getting a lot of cards as well. And then maybe not getting as many cards as they should be getting. So like, you know, without fail, they're getting sin bins in most games. So I think that's probably a lot of it too. Like, you know, we saw yesterday that there was sin bin on Alwyn Carey. On Saturday that there was sin bin on Alwyn Carey as well. Now, granted, I thought that Rachel Kearns, you know, had a bit of cuteness there in that way. So it does come down to the referee's interpretation of kind of what a sin bin is. And I think that there's a lot of inconsistency there still, which is frustrating watching games sometimes. But look, that's kind of what we're dealt with at the moment. But cynicism, I don't think they're massively cynical, but I think, look, there is that element of play where you have to play on the edge. And look, they have a couple of players that do that. And, you know, it has gotten them over the line. And I can imagine that it'll get them over the line again this year.
Yeah, Breed, and I suppose if they do get over the line, it'll be five in a row for Dublin. And that's coming off the back of, you know, Cork doing six in a row and then a five in a row prior to that, with Dublin only winning it. So it's only two teams then who would have won, I think, 16 All-Irelands in a row. you know, while we were kind of talking about some of the positives of the sport there earlier with the tiered systems, is it, would you, is there any concerning part of those two teams divvying up all the senior titles?
Yeah, there is massive concern, obviously, if you want other teams to step to the fore. And I suppose before we got into a big rivalry with Dublin, in, I'd say, six, if not more, of our All-Ireland finals, we played against different oppositions. There was different opposition in most years. And then I suppose Dublin started to really come to the fore, and we played Dublin consistently then for, you know, three, four years. So, you know, I suppose what has happened in the last couple of years is there drop-offs in underage structures? Is there drop-offs in the amount of resources that other teams have available to them? Why is there such a disparity between the top two and the next few? But I suppose the biggest, piece of optimism that you can have over the weekend is that Meath, you know, I suppose this was their real litmus against Cork, and to see them come out and to do what they did and to get over the line is a real show that, like, this can be done. And if you have the right system in place, if you have a county board that backs it, like, I know that Meath put in a lot of GDOs as well over the last couple of years. So there's massive work being done in counties like Meath, and they're really reaping the rewards. So you would hope that that would have a knock-on effect for many counties across the board, because there's a great possibility of super championships there for many years to come, given the way that the structure is. So you would just hope that a lot of counties would really step up to the mark now and drive things forward.
Yeah, hopefully we get an intriguing All-Ireland final as well. But for the moment, Bree, thanks so much for joining us.
No matter. Thanks, lads.
That's all we have time for on this week's episode of the Throw-In Podcast in association with Bord Cash Energy. We'll be back later this week with an All-Ireland hurling final preview, where myself and Michael will be joined by Galway legend, recently retired Galway legend, Joe Canning. But in the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or listen at independent.ie. Until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bord Cash Energy, proud sponsors of the GAA All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship and GAA Legends Tour Series of Croke Park. Hashtag Hurling to the Core.